is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Let me take a moment to let everyone know about the upcoming BTS Summit in St. Louis on September 27th and 28th. If you haven't heard, BTS is a comprehensive program for running a long-term, profitable, high-quality youth basketball training company. It allows someone to have a career in youth basketball, helping young people become the best they can be both on and off the court. I am honored to have Larry Hughes, 13-year NBA veteran and a co-founder of BTS, here to tell us what this summit is all about. Larry, tell us about the upcoming summit and what it's all about.
Mike, thanks and congratulations on your Hoop Heads podcast. We established the summit to provide people interested in building a successful youth basketball program the opportunity to come in for 2 days of learning what we do, how we do it, and how they can apply our system to grow their programs. In March, I opened up our 16,000 square foot facility with leading technology used by several NBA teams, which tracks every shot, every movement on the court, allowing us to objectively assess the progress of our members. People who join the summit will get a chance to use the technology and learn how we integrate it into our programs. We will have David Martin, recently head analytics of the 76ers, speak about direction of technology in basketball. We will also have presentations and workshops on how to effectively build back office systems to create memorable experiences for members and build long-term value in the business. We want to empower the attendees to take their basketball organizations to the next level. So the first 30 signups get to participate for free. Thereafter, it's $199 per person. We have arranged discounted hotels in the area. The event also offers the opportunity to network with others in similar circumstances. We're excited to provide this opportunity to market and think that all attendees will get extraordinary value for attending.
Larry, the summit sounds great. Where can people go to learn more and get signed up?
They can go to basketballtrainingsystems.com/summit to learn more or call us at 301-602-3001.
Thanks, Larry. I'm hoping to make it out to St. Louis myself.
The best way to describe it is it's kind of like personal character development for basketball players, but we kind of leverage the basketball to like not only help them with basketball, but more importantly, help them off the court.
Nick Graham is regarded as one of the top player development specialists in the country. Basketball teaching is in Nick's DNA, and he grew up as a member of a basketball family. Nick played his college basketball at Washington State for his father, Paul, and Brittany, Nick's sister, played at Georgia State. Nick grew up around college basketball and credits his dad's tenure as an assistant coach at Oklahoma State for developing him as a basketball teacher. During that time, Nick's dad, Paul, along with his coworkers, Tim Jankovich, Bill Self, and Sean Sutton, along with head coach Eddie Sutton, groomed Nick to develop players on and off the court. Since 2008, Nick Graham Player Development has contributed to the development of thousands of players worldwide, most notably Jimmer Fredette, Trae Young, and a handful of other NBA players, along with hundreds of Division I college players. In addition to on-court development, Nick has also assisted in developing players' character and leadership skills off the court. Nick is set to release his first book that is filled with basketball-themed Christian devotionals aimed at character development for competitive hoopers early next year. Make sure you're subscribed to the Hoopheads Pod on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. Your ratings help your friends and coaching colleagues find the show. If you really love what you're hearing, recommend the Hoopheads Pod to someone and get them to join you as a part of Hoopheads Nation. Trust me when I say that you are definitely going to want to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Nick Graham, Player Development Specialist.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome Nick Graham, Basketball Player Development Specialist. He's worked with Chauncey Billups. He works with Jimmer Fredette every summer. Nick, welcome to the podcast.
What's going on, man? Glad to talk hoops with you guys.
Absolutely. Excited to have you on, dig into all of the wide-ranging experiences that you've had in the game of basketball. And we're going to start out by going back in time to when you were a young kid and what made you fall in love with the game of basketball back then.
Yeah, so for me, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, you hear people say, I didn't choose it, it chose me. I felt like basketball, you know, what it chose me. And, you know, I'm a coach's kid. So my dad, when I was born in 1980, he was a coach at Kimball High School, which is a powerhouse high school here in Dallas. And by the time I was two, he was in the head coach at SMU. And so, like, I've always, like, you know, like, it's one of those deals where I had to listen to, you know, my mom talk about how I always had a ball in my hand. So I honestly loved basketball before it was even a conscious decision.
You didn't have a choice, right? You were exposed. Yeah. Early exposure, for sure.
Exactly.
So what do you remember about those early times going to the gym with your dad at practice and seeing the players and just being around it? What do you remember? What's some of your earliest memories from kind of tagging along with your father?
Yeah. So, and, you know, I tell, you know, I have, you know, how I fell in love with the game, and obviously I'm still in love with it. You know, when I talk to, you know, friends of mine or people that have young kids that, you know, they want them to fall in love with basketball, but they don't want to force it. I just, you know, like, we always, you know, I think it's like, for me, it's always you want what you can't have. So I think for me, like, I'm fortunate that I had a dad that always brought me around the kids or the players that he was playing. So, like, I always, it was almost like I can't wait until, even when I was, you know, 4 years old, 3 years old, 5 years old, I can't wait until, like, I can have a real uniform and get to go through warm-up lines and do all that kind of stuff. So I've always wanted it. And my dad just brought me around it. I was at practice, and that's really how it's how I fell in love with the game, but it's how I learned the game as well. Is I was never really taught anything. Nobody ever sat me down, even like shooting, even dribbling. Like, I was able to at 4 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old, 12 years old, whatever it was, I was able to see the best nine NBA players in the world do a crossover and go into a jump shot and do a jab step. So a lot of that stuff just always happened naturally. So, like, I saw it so much before I was physically able to do it. So then when it came time for me, when I was old enough to go do a left-hand layup or dribble between my legs, you know, I had such a really good visual. And in my mind, I knew what that looked like at the highest level.
So when you would go to practices with your dad, would you be down on the floor on the sideline? Would you be sitting in the bleachers? What were you actually doing while you were there at some of the practices and events?
So, you know, one of the cool things, I'm 38 right now. But one of the cool things is, like, the players that I looked up to that played for my dad, you know, they're still like big brothers, but we're both adults. But I had a conversation with one of his former players, Estelle Laster, who was a hell of a player at Oklahoma State. He was just a hell of a player. I always looked up to him. But we caught up last year, and he was just like, he called me and told me he was proud of me and everything I'm doing with basketball, which, as you can imagine, meant a lot.
For sure.
But he said, I knew that you were going to, like, really have an impact and do something with basketball. He said, because when you were in the fifth grade, you just had this look about you. It was just, you could just tell you were so into it, and you took it so serious, and you were so locked in. He's like, I've never seen a kid as focused. And so, like, to answer your question, it depended on what age I was. I can remember being 4 years old and, you know, sitting with my mom. And when I was 4 and 5 years old, and I used to have a thing, I used to want to eat nachos, and my mom hated it because most of the cheese would end up on my face and my clothes. But, like, I can remember those days, but I couldn't remember. I couldn't wait to get on the floor. And so then I remember, like, I went from there to being a ball boy. And when I was a ball boy, I was able to sit under the goal. And so, again, like, those memories, like, I just remember. So being a ball boy, sitting under the goal, and you imagine being 6, 7 years old, and you're sitting there at eye level, and there's 10,000 people, you know, and you're able to see that, and you're able to see the contact and how physical the game is and how fast the game is, and little nuances like calling the play, like trash talk, like communicating on screens. So I was able to see all that in the game. And then, obviously, like, I would go to practice, and, you know, like, when I was finally old enough and responsible enough to be quiet to go to practice, you know, like, I couldn't do anything. You know, I couldn't. I had to, you know, make sure that I didn't cause a distraction. So I had nothing to do. I didn't have anything else to do but just sit there and just watch the interaction and watch the engagement and watch everything. But to me, so my dad was at SMU until I was 9. And then he went to SMU for 2 years, which was really cool because I was a ball boy there as well at the Pit, 18,000. That was crazy. And one of the cool things was while I was being a ball boy, when I was in Dallas, I remember Spud Webb used to have his celebrity all-star game. I'm dating myself, but he used to have his celebrity all-star game, and I used to get on the floor for that. So, like, and I have photo albums of pictures with me sitting on Moses Malone's lap and That's Dominique awesome. Wilkins and Magic Johnson. And it was just a lot of things like that. Those things were still super cool, but that was just my childhood. And then when we went to New Mexico, that was one of those schools where they would have the NBA preseason games. And I got to be a ball boy behind the bench. So I got to be a ball boy behind the bench for the Sixers when they had Charles Barkley, the Nuggets when they had Dikembe Mutombo. And like, this is kind of bittersweet. I was for the Bulls, but it was when MJ had the gambling deal. So he was in court.
Gotcha.
So like, I'm upset.
You missed out on Jordan. I got a missed out on Jordan story too. So I worked at the flight school at Elmhurst College back in, I don't know, must've been like 89 or 90. And he always played with all the college guys on the last night of camp. And the week I was there, for whatever reason, he didn't play, so never got a chance to play with against him, however you want to put it. And the rumor was that he was out gambling with Mike Ditka the night that he was supposed to be playing, was that he was at the casino with Mike Ditka. So I can relate that missing out on Jordan was gambling.
Screwed us out of meeting Michael Jordan.
Exactly.
No screwed doubt. Us out of 2 years possibly.
That's right. That's right. And you believe more years, two more years of his prime and two more Bulls titles probably.
If you believe the conspiracy theories.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Who knows? But yeah, so I got to do that. And you know, when you're a kid, you don't realize, like, literally the best basketball coach, Phil Jackson, ever, you know, arguably ever. And I'm sitting there listening to him communicate with his team in timeouts. And I remember putting a warm up, and people my age remember the Bulls warm up like it was a signature. I remember holding it and Scottie Pippen coming to the bench and putting it around him. So that was pretty cool. But the pivotal moment for me is when, as it relates to all that, is when my dad got the job at Oklahoma State in 92. I was in sixth grade, and that's where I really developed, and that's where I learned the game, because Coach Eddie Sutton, he opened his program up to me. So that's when I was, like, old enough to really understand and old enough to interact with the guys, and I would be in the locker room and hanging out, and they would just – one, that made me tough. I remember, like, Scott Sutton, his son, one time he threw me in a dirty hamper and lock me in there, all kind of stuff. They would make fun of me. They would talk about me and all that kind of stuff. But I was able to, like, watch, really understand what was going on. And then from that same viewpoint as a ball boy, I saw Chauncey Billups, who turned out to be a good friend and my big brother, so to speak. I got to see him set a freshman record at Oklahoma State at Gallagher Eye before an opponent and get 36. I saw Paul Pierce, you know, just give somebody 32, 34 points. I was able to see that, like, as close as you can be, literally without sitting on the floor. So, you know, that's kind of like my childhood, and that's kind of how I grew up.
All right, two questions related to that. One, first question is, did you realize at the time how unique and special that opportunity was that you had as a result of just the places that your dad was working? And then two, to piggyback off that, while you were having all these great experiences and being able to interact with the players, were there conversations that you were having with was your dad having conversations with you about the game and what you were seeing, like as you're riding in the car to and from practice, or, you know, while you're sitting around at home in the living room, were you having conversations with your dad? So two things. One, did you realize how unique it was? And then two, talk about some of the conversations you had with your dad during that time of your life.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, I didn't, you know, and it's like, you know, it's one of those things, like, now, you know, basketball has, you know, allowed me to make a living. 3 years ago, I went to Kobe's last All-Star game, or whenever it was, like, as a representative for Spalding. I've led, was in Slam Magazine with this Spalding project, and we did some stuff with DeMar DeRozan and Chris Paul and all that kind of stuff. And even, I mean, like training Jimmer Fredette, you know, like I remember the first summer I trained him, like I was pinching myself, like this is one of the most prolific scorers that, you know, we that of my time in college basketball. But I would always reflect back on basically what you said. I didn't realize how valuable it was to be in that environment, because that was just normal every day. But the one thing that I am proud of is I didn't take it for granted. As I went there every day when I was old enough to drive in high school, like I would skip lunch and go up there and either work out or just sit around. And I would just be around. So like the conversations, the cool thing was, it wasn't just my dad. It was Coach Sutton. It was Sean Sutton. Tim Jankovic, who is assistant, who's at SMU, John Pelfrey, who's a head coach, and then even Bill Self and him worked together. So the conversations weren't even just, those guys were like uncles to me. So it wasn't even my dad, but like with my dad, he would always, you know, like we would always talk about, you know, cause my dad was like a bad cop, you know, and he was like, so to just see that and tell me, you know, like, you know, how hard it is to make it and why he's pushing these guys so hard. Cause I would look at it and I wouldn't understand, like, man, like my dad is crazy. That's what I used to think that all the time. But then when I saw a guy, it's a kid named Adrian Peterson, not a kid, but like played at Oklahoma State. He was a all Big Eight player. I looked up to him. He would have went to the NBA, but he blew his knee out in the combine. And my dad, for 2 weeks, my dad just rolled him and rolled him and rolled him and rolled him. And this dude couldn't stand my dad. And I thought this guy was just the best player ever. And then they played Paul Pierce, and Paul Pierce just lit him up. And, you know, just to go back and see, okay, this is why my dad is, you know, so driven. And this is why he's driving him, because, yeah, this kid is good, but he's getting ready to go play who now we know is one of the best players to ever play the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when you have that opportunity to see those things firsthand, whether it's from all those great coaches that you mentioned or the players that you've been fortunate enough to either watch, be connected to, work with, train, when you're around people who are of exceptional quality and are very, very good at what they do, then I think, especially when you're motivated and when it's in an area that you're interested in, and in your case, that you had fallen in love with when you were younger, when you get a chance to interact and observe those people in their natural environment, it just had to be so beneficial for you on every single level, both from a playing standpoint, and then eventually, as you got into more of the coaching side of it, you could go back and recall those lessons and things that you had learned along the way. As you were starting to get into high school, I'm sure that because of all the exposure that you had to high-level basketball, you had a pretty good idea in your mind that I'm sure you wanted to follow in the footsteps of some of the guys that you had looked up to and wanted to play college basketball. So talk a little bit about your process for choosing a college and when you knew you were going to have the opportunity to be recruited and go play college basketball. Talk a little bit about that experience heading into your high school years and then going on to college.
Yeah, so like the thing that stands out to me is as I reflect back, you know, there was a lot of positives of, you know, the environment and being exposed to great players. But probably one of the setbacks was I never thought I was very good, just because like when I was in high school, I was comparing myself to like Desmond Mason or Paul Pierce or Chauncey Billups. And so, like, I never, like, in my mind, I never measured up to them, you know, because my dad was at a high major university there. One of the best experiences my family, not only me, and that's how the basketball family, like, our family, like, you know, like, if our spring break, man, our team better go to the NCAA tournament and we ain't going on. We're not going on spring break. But one of the coolest experiences was going to the Final Four. You know, we went to the Final Four in 95 with Big Country. But, you know, that's the caliber of player my dad was recruiting. So, like, in my mind, like, if I wasn't, you know, that good, I wasn't good at all. And you look back at it now as an adult and you realize, like, first of all, like, I don't measure up. You know, my dad recruited Chauncey Billups. He signed Larry Johnson. I got to go with my dad. That was one of the coolest things. My dad was a great recruiter. Great coach, but a really great recruiter. He signed Larry Johnson to SMU out of high school. And I was 5-6 years old. I used to go with my dad to watch him play, you know, so like that just came back to bite me in the butt a little bit in high school. But I think overall it made me humble just because like I knew what game speed was. Like I knew how hard it was to work on my game. And my dream was to go to Oklahoma State. I mean, that, like I said, that's the program that raised me. I was this is the early 90s when there was no halftime entertainment. So I was the halftime entertainment. I would go play the other ball boys and just beat them 21. So I always wanted to go play at Oklahoma State. I wasn't that good to go play at that level. And so, like, I was more of like I was getting like Missouri, Kansas City, schools like that. And my dad, so it was twofold. I wanted to either play at Oklahoma State, but my ultimate dream was to always play for my dad, play high school or play college basketball for my dad. I remember going to church. We would go to church and like he would let me wear his championship ring. He'd take it off and I put it on and I would just daydream about playing for him, cutting down the nets and doing that kind of thing. And so I didn't know anything about recruiting and I started getting recruited and getting calls. And I told coaches that I was going to wait for my dad to see if he got a job. And my dad didn't know I was telling him this and he wondered why the phone wasn't ringing as much. And sure enough, I did. And my dad was so upset with me. He couldn't believe I did it, but I didn't know. I was just trying to be honest. Right. And, up until that point, my dad had been a coach for 17 years, no head coaching offers. And it's crazy, man. Like that was the year he got one. Like it was the spring of a year. It was at Washington. It was at Washington State. The roster was depleted. So like they needed to some scholarships. So it kind of worked out for me and it kind of worked out for us. But yeah, that was kind of my journey from high school into college. Obviously, I knew what I wanted. I knew that I wanted to play in college. You know, I just loved college basketball, everything about it. So
what was your best, before we go to high school, what was your best high school basketball memory? What's your best memory from playing in high school ball?
Probably my sophomore year, we were ranked number one in the state. We were really good. Just that whole process. It was tough. Matt Holliday, the baseball player, was on our team. We were really good. We were underdogs, but just being a part of that team, we lost in the game to go to state. The guy threw it in from the other free throw line. It got tipped and everything. But I think that just competing for a state championship, even though we fell short, and at that point in time, like our team had never been rated that high, and it was just, and we weren't like a, it wasn't like we were Sierra Canyon with Lil Bronny and Zaire Wade and all that. We were just a bunch of like hard nosed guys that guarded the heck out of you. Our coach was people thought he was like Bob Knight. We ran great motion, but we just guarded the heck out of you. So just being a part of something like that, where we went from kind of just an afterthought to rallying the whole community. I grew up in Stillwater, so it's a one high school town. So like, I think that's really cool when you're part of a team that's successful, because the whole city, the whole town is around you. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, high school basketball, when you can get that and a team has success and they rally around. I know here in Ohio, you get a team, they win. Typically in Ohio, our state tournament is organized where you play in the sectional, then you play in the district, then you play in the regional, and then you play in the state. So typically what happens is that community, all right, sectional, big deal. You get to like a district final, and so that usually means you've played either two or three games and you're down to like the final 32 in the state, and that's when the communities just really start to come out and rally around. Yep. If you go any further than that, it's so much fun, regardless of whether you're coaching or playing, to be able to be in that kind of environment where, as you said, the town comes together and just, you know, when it's the only show in town, it makes it, you know, makes it very, very, very exciting. So talk about, you get to college, talk about what it was like to, you had kind of fantasized, dreamed about, talked about playing for your dad. So talk about what that experience was like for you when you finally got that opportunity to play at Washington State and play under your dad. Talk a little bit about what that was like and what that experience was for you.
Yeah. Before we do that, one thing just to kind of like wrap up what you said, because this is something that I am committed to making sure seniors know and parents of seniors. You know, even if you go play in college, there's the funnest year of your basketball career should be your senior year. And I feel so many people that don't realize that and take that for granted. You know, if you're college bound and you're going to college on scholarship, it's going to be more rewarding playing in college. But as you know, like playing in high school, especially when you're good enough to play in college, because it's just fun. It's you and your friends, people that you've grown up with, like you said, playing in front of your community. So just if there's any seniors out there, just make sure you enjoy it. Don't take it for granted. And don't think, oh, I'm going to college and I'm going to be playing on ESPN and flying in private jets. And I don't care what you do in college. It's not going to be near as fun as your senior year in high school. So I think that's important.
That's a great point. I it's funny that you say that because I couldn't agree. First of all, I couldn't agree more with you. I think that so many times you'll see, and you know, I'll talk to parents or see kids where they're just looking for what's next instead of enjoying what they have right there in front of them. And I think that if I look back on my own playing career, I agree with you. I know that when I was in high school, there was never a day, a practice, a conditioning session, a training session, a summer league, a camp, a game, anything in high school that I didn't look forward to with every single ounce of my being. And then when I got to college, it was still a great experience and I love playing. But to your point, it was a lot more work. And there were definitely days where I didn't want to go to practice and practice wasn't fun. And there was a lot of work to be done. And again, as you said, there were rewards, there were opportunities to play and go against great competition and travel to great places and play against other really good teams and really good players. And there was nothing more satisfying to me than being able to challenge myself at that level. But I agree with you 100% that for people who think that, boy, I can't wait to get done with high school so I can get on to college basketball, I think you're 100% right that it should be about that senior year, heck, that junior year, that sophomore year. Enjoy every single minute that you get to play the game. Because as you know, once you're done playing, it's tough to replace. And I've said it before that nothing in my life has ever replaced that competitive spirit of playing. And I miss it to this day. Now, I don't miss playing as a 49-year-old. I miss being able to play as I was when I was 21. But nothing replaces that. And so every minute that you get to lace the sneakers up and go out on the court and play should be a joy. And don't wish it away trying to get to the next thing. I think that's a great point that you brought up there, Nick, for sure.
So college, you know, like college for me, well, first of all, as I transitioned in from high school to college, I was told that I was going to redshirt. And, you know, I've heard before, don't let people label you, because when they label you, they limit you. If somebody labels you a redshirt, you're going to accept that label. And then it's going to manifest, not because you're not capable, because you just, you know, prepare accordingly. Well, you know, like one of the things I did at that point in time is I didn't accept that. And this was my dad, you know, he's like, you know, we got to get you big. We got to get you strong, you know, so you're going to redshirt. And so I was still in Stillwater, graduating and all that. I used to go wake up and train with the high school or with the college football team. I used to lift with them and train with them. And, you know, like it was just that whole process, you know, obviously it was so humbling because here you are, this underdeveloped high school basketball player that I probably weighed 140 pounds. No more than 150. And I'm with these, you know, Big 12 players. Some of them going to play in the NFL and all that. And I just did it every day, got after it, worked, and just ate and just drank protein shakes until I couldn't anymore and did all that. And then the other thing that happened was I knew that I was going to the Pac-12 10 back then, and Baron Davis was there. And like I tell kids all the time, my Baron Davis story, I used to have nightmares. I literally had nightmares about Baron Davis, you know, because guys our age know what he was like. He was Derrick Rose, a more polished Derrick Rose back in the day.
That guy was physical and fast and could jump, and whoa, he was good.
Yeah. So, like, I just prepared every day. Like, whatever I did every day when I got up, I was running with the football team and beating the sun up and, you know, like, stadium stairs and getting up jump shots. And, you know, my body was starting to change and people were complimenting me. And they were like, oh, my God, Nick, you're getting strong. You're getting bigger. You're getting faster. But I was just, like, in my mind, like, I just had, like, a reel of Baron Davis dunking on people and talking fast. Crossing them up and making them fall. I knew that's what I was preparing myself for. Fortunately for me, Baron Davis declared for the draft, and I never had to deal with that. But just that process of like preparing to like be on the same floor with him made me so much better. So by the time I got to Washington State, and for summer school, everybody, you know, thought my dad was sandbagging because I was 20 pounds heavier. I looked the part. I was mentally and physically prepared. So instead of redshirting, I played, and I played well. Actually, my freshman year was probably my best year. You know, like my college career, you know, it was the toughest point of my life. I probably was depressed for a few years after that. And just looking back at it now, I didn't know at the time, but it was like it was so much pressure playing for my dad. You know, my dad was a first year head coach. It wasn't like he was, Eddie Sutton when he coached Sean Sutton, or, you know, Wade Houston when he coached Allen Houston. It wasn't one of those deals. And, you know, I was playing. You know, I was a contributor. I wasn't a star player, but I was contributing. And I had no idea how much pressure was going to be placed on me. And not only that, you know, I felt the pressure that was placed on my dad. And so I think that as each year went on, there was more speculation that my dad was going to get fired. And so, like, I played with that pressure. You know, I remember, you know, going up for an open jump shot. And in my mind, like, I'm shooting to keep my dad's job. And it was just it was extremely, extremely tough. I'm glad I went through it just because I think that helps me in what I do now in terms of just the player development and the character development, you know, because I know maybe what I needed back then. And, you know, what I needed somebody to do and how they could support me. And that's what I try to be for the players that I'm able to develop now.
Yeah, I can't imagine adding on the pressure of feeling like you had to play for your dad's job on top of all the normal pressures that you feel as a Division I college basketball player. You deal with enough from just trying to manage your own self, both on the floor and in the classroom and in your social life and all that stuff. And now you're throwing on the pressure of, man, I got to try to help my dad win games so he can keep his job. And I can't even imagine what that had to be like.
Head Start Basketball's fall skill development clinics will be held at the Strongsville Rec Center on 4 consecutive Saturdays in October. These skill clinics will be from 4 to 6 p.m. beginning on October 5th. The skills clinics are for boys and girls in grades 1 through 8. If you're looking for a great way to get prepared for your season, sign up for the Head Start Basketball Fall Skill Development Clinics at www.headstartbasketball.com.
If you had to look back on your experience, and again, thinking about maybe somebody who's out there listening, whether it's a high school basketball player or the parent maybe of a high school basketball player, what's some advice that you would have for somebody as they were transitioning? So let's say it's a kid who's going to go from high school to play college basketball at whatever level. Could be Division I, could be Division III. But what advice would you have for a kid who's transitioning today from high school to college basketball? What are some things that they should watch out for, some things that they should think about heading into that new experience?
Yeah, so like for me, I think that, you know, my confidence was conditional to the confidence that other people had in me. And so when I got down to the point where, you know, like my dad wasn't playing me. And, you know, it wasn't just my coach not believing in me. It was like my dad not believing in me. At least that's the way it felt at the time. And I think that the dynamic with me being a coach's kid, like the players on the team, like they were jealous of my relationship with my dad off the court, because even if my dad wasn't playing me, he still had a connection with me. You know what I mean? And so I think they were jealous of that. Not that my dad didn't speak to them, but obviously it's different. You know, we'd be in the airport on a layover and we would be walking, you know, from the food court, and my dad would call me over and I would go over there and, you know, he just wanted me to talk to my mom because I hadn't talked to her all day. But to a 19, 20 year old kid, it's like, see, he's different. And so because of that, when things got tough for me in college, there was nobody there to lift me up. And so my advice is to get to the point, develop the mental toughness to where you believe in yourself. Even if the whole world turned against you, you still believe in yourself. And, you know, it's great when you have a coach that believes in you. It's great that when you have a teammate to lift you up and remind you how good you are. But get to the point where that comes from, you know, that comes from within, because that's the only thing you can truly rely on.
Yeah, that's great advice. I think that anytime you can internalize that as opposed to externalize it, I think you're going to be a lot better off, because we all know that outside forces can have a lot of negative, they can send a lot of negative influence your way. And when you can keep that, your internal confidence, as you described, and know that you can believe in yourself and not have to have somebody else validate what it is that you're doing, I'm sure that you're a lot better off. How did you and your dad handle the conversations about basketball during the time when you were playing for him? So obviously growing up, you had the opportunity to talk to him about basketball all the time. And now once you're playing for him, that dynamic sort of becomes different, because I'm sure that, you know, you want to keep it in the basketball realm, on the practice floor, in the gym, you know, in the film room. And then, you know, you're still seeing him outside as father-son. So when you were spending your father-son time away from the basketball court, how did you guys handle that communication piece? Was basketball completely off limits? Did it have to come from you? Did you guys just talk about it all the time because you were both immersed in it? How did you guys handle those conversations?
Honestly, man, back then, I didn't want to talk to him about basketball, just because, like, I couldn't look at him as like my dad. I looked at him as like, just not playing me. So,
right, I understand.
Yeah, it's just like,
I
when
get
you
get it.
Yeah, like, and so that made it worse for me, because, like, you know, I, rightfully so, he still wants to be my dad and do this. And it's just like, dude, you're not playing me. I don't want to go talk about, like, you know, something, you know, like, where we're going to go out to eat as a family, or, you know, this or that, you know. So, you know, that was, yeah, that's how I chose to handle it. You know, like I said, it was extremely tough. Like, where I remember I think that, you know, my dad put so much pressure on himself, you know, to, you know, my dad is, you know, he came, like, so my dad, obviously I'm black, so my dad's black, but, you know, like, there was, like, when my dad came up, there was a fight, you know, there was a Black Coaches Association, and, you know, there were very few, you know, men of color coaching. And so, like, my dad, you know, worked his butt off. He never took a day off. And so when he was able to finally fight through that and get a head coaching job, not only a head coaching job, but a head coaching job at a high major, you know, he felt that pressure. And my dad wasn't from, he was a Midwest guy, a Texas guy, and he went all the way to the West Coast. So there were already these question marks. And so, like, you know, that pressure, you know, like, he put so much pressure on itself. I think that it put a certain strain on our relationship as to where, like, he couldn't, you know, really give me what I needed in terms of support. But I think that made me better. Like I said, I think that, like, I don't want anybody to ever go, you know, through that and feel like I felt. I remember the first game that we played, man, you know how it is, your first game in college, your name's on the back of your jersey, you're excited. I played a total of 37 seconds, and here's why.
So I was a first guard off the bench, and you know, we had a little quick hitter play that we were going to run if the shot clock got to, like, let's say 11 seconds. And you know, it's my first possession in college, and me being around college so much, I'm just like thinking about everything. And so, like, the clock in my head is like super slow. So all of a sudden, everybody's yelling. I don't even hear anything. It's like mute. And next thing I know, they hear the shot clock buzzer go off. And so there's a turnover. This is back when they had exhibition games, so it's not even a real game. So my dad took me out and benched me and didn't play me the rest of the game. So
message sent, Nick.
And yeah. Message received, probably.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that summed up the kind of the pressure that I played with. And I just remember how empty I felt at times. And so, like, being there, sometimes you have to go through something. So, like, that would be the other thing with my advice is I think that, like, we as a society are, you know, smart enough and have evolved enough to understand that, like, it doesn't dilute your masculinity to say that you want to talk about something, to say that you understand, to go seek somebody out that's going to get you in the right place mentally. So that would be my advice, too. Like, when you get to those dark moments and you're down in the dumps, open yourself up and seek somebody out that can help talk you through it. That doesn't make you weak. That doesn't mean you're making excuses. You're just trying to get in the right place to overcome it.
Yeah, I think that that's something that has for sure changed in the time since you played, the time since I played. And, you know, recently with the guys who have come out with, you know, sharing the difficulties that they've had with, you know, depression and battling some of those things, whether it's, you know, DeMar DeRozan or Kevin Love or any of these guys that have had, you know, these issues, the fact that now it's come more to be acceptable is the wrong word, but it's easier for guys to be able to share what they're going through. And I think if we were all honest, that we would all probably say that at some point in our career, whether we were a college basketball player or whether we were fortunate enough to be able to play pro basketball, I think everybody goes through that at some point in their career. Because if you're going to have a tremendous amount of success, it gets tough at times and it takes a lot of hard work and it takes mental toughness and it takes things that when stuff isn't going your way, you've got to be able to fight through that. You can't crumble and you can't go into a shell. And yet, I know I can remember times where if I had a game that I didn't play as well as I had hoped, that whether it was high school or college, and I'd go back and sit on my bed, whether it was in my bedroom at home when I was in, you know, when I was in high school, or, you know, in college, sit in the dorm room and just, you know, just kind of beat yourself up. And now you look at that and you go, man, was that a healthy way to handle it? Or would it have been better if I could have had somebody to talk to about it and work my way through it? Maybe I would have bounce back faster and been able to handle adversity better. And I think that that's something that everybody goes through. And I think that's great advice that you're throwing out there for people, Nick, is just to recognize that, you know, if you see yourself starting to get down, that find somebody that you can talk to, even if it's not somebody who's a professional, find a friend, find somebody that you can find a parent, find somebody that you can open up to, that you can at least get somebody else's perspective on what's going on. Because we all know we get wrapped up in our own stuff. And we forget that as important as basketball is to each and every one of us, it's still a game and it doesn't determine our self-worth. But sometimes we forget that. It's easy to. And I know I was guilty of that many times. I was guilty of that many, many times during my career. And there was a long time where my entire identity, at least my self-identity, was through basketball. Yeah. And you know, it takes time to get past that.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I think that's great advice for people. All right, let's go to this. When did you start to think about wanting to stay involved in the game as a coach? Was that something that you thought about way back when you were a young kid and you're like, man, someday I want to be able to coach a team like my dad? Or at that point, were you still so focused on I want to be a basketball player that it didn't get on your radar? At what point did you start thinking about, hey, I want to stay involved in the game and coaching is going to be an avenue for me to be able to do that?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, like, I was like everybody else, I had the NBA dreams and all that, but I had just as many dreams about coaching as well. You know, like, I mean, come on, you grow up around
not only my dad, like I said, but just being around Bill Self and Eddie Sutton and Sean Sutton and all those guys, you know, that was just kind of like, one, it was natural. I was just being around them. It just kind of was just organically developed within me, you know, so that was always the deal. So my thing was, I was going to play for my dad, then I was going to join his staff and just work my way up. Unfortunately, he got fired. And, you know, it's funny because you tell that to people that aren't in basketball and they kind of look like, oh, my God, I'm sorry. You know, it's just like, hey, it's basketball. You
stay right. That's part of the deal. Exactly.
Yeah. So like I did that and that was the plan. And when that didn't happen, you know, I thought that, you know, I would get like a GA spot or, you know, one of those type of positions with somebody that, you know, we know. But as you know, those spots always go to your to former players. And, you know, I think that as I transitioned into like player development, I think it was just because my career didn't go the way that I thought it was. I always saw myself as, you know, I had aspirations of being the next Jeff Capel, because when I was coming out, Jeff Capel was a 27-year-old head coach. And that was kind of like my goal. And I remember being like 26, 27, thinking I was a failure at life because it didn't happen. I didn't have that goal. But I think that I just kind of like continued to take a liking for the player development because I never had it. And I felt like if I would have had something like that, you know, it would have made all the difference in the world. And I started getting into the player development, and it was kind of, it's crazy that I never realized I was a good player until I started training pros. And when I was like 26, 27, I would train pros and like I would want them to do something and they didn't do it to my liking. So I just get out there, shoes untied, and just do it. And they would look like, man, like, what are you doing? What is that? Or we would play one-on-one, and, you know, like I could hold my own. And a lot of times it would be like a respectable, you know, overseas type pro. And I was able to kind of have my way with them. And then I started working with Todd Lawson. We did a lot of stuff together, and we had a camp. It was an amazing camp, a youth camp. And we would have an all-star game. We would have the youth all-star game. Then he would have a team of guys and I would have a team of guys, and we'd play against each other. And, you know, obviously it's Ty Lawson, and this is when he was in his prime. So he outplayed me, but I played well enough. It was almost like personal validation for me to know that I was a really good player. And the coolest part about it was my dad was at the game. So I was looking at him like, you idiot.
Should have played me more, right?
Yeah.
So. That's funny. That is funny. Oh man, do you ever think that maybe had you gone somewhere else? I mean, I know you wanted to play for your dad and you probably don't have any regrets about doing it, but is there a part of you anywhere that thinks maybe if I had gone somewhere else that things might have turned out differently?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And people would ask me that all the time. And like, I felt like it would have made my dad look bad, you know, like he's already struggling and his kids transferring, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's just, you're thinking like an 18-year-old, you're thinking like a 19-year-old. And, you know, looking back, you go back and these are conversations that I should have maybe had, you know, but at the same time, like I bleed crimson and gray, Washington State University. I take so much pride in graduating from that school. And like I have a degree on my wall from Washington State. And, you know, so like had I left, I wouldn't have been able to have lifelong relationships. But more importantly, you know, at the end of the day, like we're all going to, our careers are going to be done at some point. And, you know, like I think that like if I would have had an All-American career and all this crazy stuff like that and won national titles, it would still fail in comparison in the impact that I've made through player development. You know, like on my website, the best part of my website to me is kind of like I have a wall, not a wall of fame, but like I have a wall of like a lot of players that I've worked with. And one of the things that I think is cool is there's 5-year-old kids from little kitty Christmas camps that I felt like I've impacted. And there's Jimmer Fredette and there's Trey Young and everybody in between. And so, like, to know that I've had a significant, you know, it may not be the hugest impact, it may be small, but it was significant impact on thousands of players all over the world and all over the country. You know, that's way more fulfilling to me than anything that could have happened in my career. You know, when I get a call from, you know, Rayford Young, Trey's dad, and said, and calling me and saying, you know, I really, you know, the time you spent with Trey, you know, it really helped him. And obviously, like, Trey is somebody that he's worked at that point in time, he's worked with Chris Paul and LeBron James. It wasn't the stuff that I helped him with on the court. It was like we would get up every morning and we go to breakfast and just kind of meditate and just talk about being a good person and a good leader and all that type of stuff. And just, I don't think that if I wasn't able to, you know, come from the ashes of the things that I went through at Washington State, I don't think that I would have been able to have those conversations. So,
yeah, I think that that's something that anybody who looks back on their life, you know, you can always look at the forks in the road that you came to and the paths that you chose. And there may be a small party. It's like, I wonder if I would have gone this direction, but ultimately the path that you did choose is the one that led you to where you are now. And if you had chosen something else, you might not be the person, as you described, you might not be the person who you are today. You might not have had the impact that you've been able to have today. And I think that despite the fact that we oftentimes look back and think, maybe I should have made a different decision, ultimately, the path that we did chose leads us to where we are today. And I think that's something that's important to remember as we look back and reflect on our own life. Let me ask you about, first of all, how you got into player development. So how did you start just working with players? How did you get your, for lack of a better word, how did you get your business of player development started? And then once you talk about that, talk a little bit about what you feel is the value add that you bring to player development beyond just the basketball skills that you can teach a kid. You kind of touched on it a little bit with what you did with Trae Young, but just talk a little bit about some of the value add things that you feel you bring to player development once you describe how you got started in the business.
Yeah. So for me, I think that, like, you know, just coming full circle with the conversation, you know, basketball, the relationships of basketball, you know, have been so intimate to me. And I think that, like, that's what's cool about player development. What the toughest part about player development is you miss the team part of it. You know, the year I was at Iowa State, I loved it. You know, like we talked about, like, playing the game. You know, my favorite part of, like, when I was at Iowa State is the road games, the bus ride from the hotel to the arena. Like, there's very few things in life like that. Like, man, you got this group of guys you've been battling with, grinding with, and nobody is saying anything, but you can feel like that unison, and everybody has got one goal. And, you know, you get off, they park the bus and you get off, and everybody, you know, kind of gives each other that. You know, that handshake, but it's just different. It's kind of like you give each other that look, you look each other deep in the eyes, and it's just like, let's go to war, let's go. Like, there's nothing like that. So, you know, I that's kind of what you give up with player development, you know. But on the other side of that, the intimacy of the relationships that you have. And I think that just because, you know, like, I've always had that, I grew up in the gym, you know, I'm single, and probably one of the reasons is that I'm single is because, you know, I'd be dating somebody and I'd be like, hey, I got a workout. It's over at 5 o'clock. And it's, you know, like 5:45 and we're supposed to go to a nice dinner and it's 5:45 and I'm still sitting there talking with Jimmer. I'm still talking with Chauncey about this and that, just getting lost. You know,
us coaches love basketball, Nick.
Yeah. We just love that. In the gym, just basketball. The culture, right? And so, like, I think that, like, that's kind of what drew me in. You know, like, I got done in 2003, and this before, like, every, you know, this was before player development was, like, really a deal. And I just enjoyed it. My plan was to get into college coaching. So I did college coaching for a year and, at Missouri Baptist, and I did the player development. That was probably the thing that I enjoyed the most. And there was a sports agency in Denver And I had a girlfriend. My girlfriend's serious relationship lived back in Denver, so we were long distance. So you know how that is. You know, like the heart wants what the heart wants. So he had called me with an opportunity to go do player development. And at this point in time, I was like intimidated by it. I didn't know if I was going to be good at it. So I did it for about 6 or 7 professional players, overseas players. And I just was, I like I said, I didn't think I was very good, but, you know, I just stayed up and just worked at it, and they loved it. And I think that, like, it's just being around, like, those basketball teachers like Coach Sutton and Bill Self and my dad. I think that, you know, the thing, my takeaway from being around all the coaches, even, like, when I was a water boy for Phil Jackson, like I said, is just their ability to connect with their players, you know, their ability to communicate, connect, to demand excellence, and you know how they did that. And so I think that that's what's allowed me. I think that that's what's allowed me to kind of be successful. So I started doing that, and I just started with a few clients after the summer went, when I was doing the stuff with the pro guys. I was like, man, I think I can do this on my own. So I started. I didn't have a gym. I didn't know anybody in the city. And I started with a few girls. And, you know, just one thing led to another. And I was able to establish myself in Denver and just kind of like organically build a brand and help a lot of players. And like I said, do things that I never thought I would do. Working with Ty Lawson, working with Jimmer Fredette, working with the NBA players. And Chauncey Billups, who my dad, Chauncey Billups and Larry Johnson, as I mentioned, were the two players that, like, my dad really recruited hard, that he was just the most fond of. And I remember my dad talking about how good Chauncey was, and I would go outside and emulate his moves as a kid. And then come full circle, I didn't even know if Chauncey even remembered me. He went on his visit to Oklahoma State. He had built a gym in Denver. And requested a meeting and offered me the opportunity to partner with him doing player development together. It was probably the most rewarding moment of my life, to have my childhood basketball hero sit across a meeting, a boardroom from me, and pitch me on why we should work together. Like, dude, you.
What was the pitch? He's like, hey, Nick, I want you to work with me. And you were like, all right, sold.
So, like, you know, like, I was going to say yes as soon as he opened his mouth. But, you know, I was like, how many times do you have somebody that is that impactful, you know, just tell you, you know, how much they respect you? So I just let him keep going.
That's it.
You know, he just, you know, like, the cool thing about Chauncey is like, he wants to give back. You know, he knows that God's blessed him with an amazing experiences in basketball and all that, and he wants to help as many people in his community, and not even his community. Like, we worked out Eric Bledsoe this summer, just as many young players, just to help them and mentor them to be fulfilled with basketball, and also, you know, be able to use basketball to create a better life for themselves and many others. So yeah, like, we've done that. We've been doing stuff since like 2015, I believe it is. And, you know, we're still, you know, doing a lot of stuff in terms of helping develop people in Colorado and assisting him and helping a lot of the young NBA players as well.
So are you guys just strictly that partnership player development, or do you guys have a bigger basketball business around that with AAU stuff and other things, or is it just strictly on the player development side?
Yeah, so he has AAU teams, but I'm not affiliated with that. And we're not, obviously, like, I went to Iowa State 2 years ago. So, like, once I went to Iowa State 2 years ago, because I thought I wanted to get into coaching, I thought that's where God was leading me, is to just kind of go back to team coaching. Obviously, like, I wasn't formally, you know, affiliated with him in terms of the development, but this speaks to the kind of person Chauncey is. When I was at Iowa State, and how committed he is to just helping as many people as he can in basketball. Every Sunday, pretty much every Sunday, he would call me and he would kind of guide me so I could be a good mentor to, like, Lindell Wigginton, Taylen Horton Tucker, and, you know, watch film. Like, I would send him film and he would, you know, kind of give me advice as to things to do with that. So, like, we're still always connected at the hip. Like, we both love basketball and we both, you know, really enjoy helping people. So like, it's, we kind of like, the best way to describe it is it's kind of like personal character development for basketball players, but we kind of leverage the basketball to like, not only help them with basketball, but more importantly, help them, you know, just off the court.
I couldn't agree with that philosophy anymore. Anybody who's listened to the show knows it. I talk about that all the time, of the ability to use basketball as a vehicle to be able to teach those life lessons and have an impact on kids or college students or adults, if we're talking about pro players. Just, again, to be able to help them not only improve as a basketball player, but just to improve the quality of their life everywhere they go. And that could be with their family, that could be in school, that could be in their, eventually their job or their career. And I think that that's something that the best of the best, when it comes to whether it's coaches of a college team, a high school team, a player development person, a pro coach, I think the best of the best take the opportunity to be able to not only teach the basketball skills and fundamentals, but also to be able to teach those life skills and fundamentals of life. And it sounds like that's what you and Chauncey are able to do. And that's almost like what you're doing for each other and watching out for each other and being able to have that kind of impact. And when you have that, I mean, that's something special. And for you, I can only imagine, here's a guy who you looked up to when you were a kid, and now you've been able to develop this relationship with him on a whole nother level that I'm sure if you went back, you know, to the time when you were 15, if we'd have told you, hey, someday you're going to be, you know, on the phone once a week with Chauncey Billups talking about, you know, your life and player development, and he's going to be helping you, and you know, you're going to be working together, I'm sure you would have looked at us like we were crazy. And now you've had that opportunity. It's just got to be a tremendous blessing for you.
Absolutely. So like my funny, and you know, the thing about, you asked about like from a you know, the value of like, I think the player development is, you know, for me is, you know, understanding game speed, understanding game pressure, understanding all that stuff, you know, being around these coaches, being around Chauncey, and all that kind of stuff. You know, I think that, you know, sometimes I feel like it stinks for, you know, students of the game that do player development. You know, somebody like me, I know there are a lot of them out there, because, you know, there's a lot of great people doing player development, but there's a lot of people that gravitate towards making a living off player development because, you know, like if you wanted to like open up your own practice, you'd have to go to medical school. You can't just go rent some space and just start giving somebody fillings. At least I hope not.
I don't want to go to that dentist. I know that.
Exactly. Whereas, as you guys know, like in basketball, as it relates to training, like I can just look like I train and go put, you know, a million cones down on the floor and, you know, just use a bunch of big words, and all of a sudden, you know, some parent is going to be duped. And then they're going to go tell somebody else and tell somebody else. And it's not like I'm looking at it from a standpoint as it sucks for me, because there's a lot of people playing basketball, so I'll be fine from that standpoint. But it's just like, if you're going to cultivate, you know, a basketball player, then I feel like you've got to pay your dues. And, you know, obviously the life that I've lived, I've, you know, paid my dues and been taught. And like to exclamate that, paying your dues, how about this? It's like a weeknight and I get a call at like 9:45, let's say. And it's like, are you working out Jimmer Fredette tomorrow? It's from Chauncey. I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to jump in the workout. So I was so nervous, you know, like you're working out Jimmer Fredette, and that's already, you know, intimidating enough, you know. And so now all of a sudden, with no preparation, like Chauncey wants to jump into workout. And so like when he was, you know, he told me it was a great workout and he was pleased and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, so that was super intimidating. But after the fact, to your point about how rewarding it is of all the, you know, the things that, you know, he's opened up doors for me and helped me with, you know, all kind of stuff with basketball. But that validation to actually like be good enough at what I do to work out Mr. Big Shot, you know, that was like, you know, that was a very cool moment as well.
I'm sure it was. How do you get a pro player to believe in what you're selling as a player development guy? So what's the key to these guys are playing at the highest level, whether it's an NBA player, it's an overseas pro, it's a college star. These are some of the best players in the world. So what do you do as a player development coach to prepare and make sure that you're going to provide value to those guys so they want to come back and continue to work with you? What is the key to being able to do that on a regular basis? Like, how do you go about preparing for those workouts to make sure that your guys that you're working with are getting value out of what you're providing them?
Man, I think that's a great question. And I think that's a question a lot of aspiring player developers who haven't had the opportunity to work with a professional or NBA player need to realize, because I think that there's a lot of people out there that invest a lot of time, but they're kind of barking up the wrong tree. You know, the first thing I would say is like, the higher up you go, the more specialized you are. And so I see a lot of player developers that try to be all encompassing. You know what I mean? Like, I see a lot of guys, they'll try to work out a pro player like they're working out a 9-year-old. They'll have an agility ladder. They're trying to like have them do push-ups and get stronger and all that kind of stuff. Like, no, this guy is a millionaire. He has the best stretch person on the planet. He's got the best strength coach on the planet. He doesn't need you to give him nutrition advice. He's got a guy for that. Your job is to help him develop and maintain his game. You know, so I would say that would be the first thing. Just narrow your focus and then just watch a lot of film. I think you have to watch a lot of film in terms of understanding how they're being guarded. You have to watch a lot of film understanding how they play, what kind of shots they can get, what kind of actions, how they're scoring. And then along with that, going back to the analogy of, you know, when you're working out a 12-year-old, like, you're trying to make them well-rounded. Okay, so when I work out Jimmer Fredette, like, we've been working out 5 years. We've never worked on post-ups. That's not what's making him $3 or $4 million overseas. You know, that's not what's keeping the lights on. So it's kind of the as opposite. So say, for example, like this summer when we worked, when we were working with Jimmer, like, he wanted to be more consistent, believe it or not, on his catch and shoots. He wanted to get his – yeah, that's crazy.
Don't we all want to be better on our catch and shoots? Hold on a second.
Yeah, I think I'd like to be a little bit more consistent too, Jimmer. I think I'd like to get there.
Yeah, and you know what's the best thing about working out Jimmer, man, is all you got to do is just stand under the basket. You ain't getting no wrong.
The ball's coming right down through the net, huh?
Yeah, it's coming right back to you. But, you know, we worked on – like his footwork, just making his footwork more efficient, and then just being able to, like, we always work on finishing. So I think that, like, just kind of narrowing your focus, understanding that you are a specialist and you're training a specialist, I think that that will help you. But and probably the last thing, and Chauncey's really helped me a lot with this, is like, you need to educate yourself and empower yourself to understand, to really truly grasp, you know, the physical demands on their body. And you have to understand, like, when do we go hard? You know, like, when do we tone it down? Because your training needs to kind of be complementary of where they're at in the process. You know, so say, for example, like, when we start with Jimmer and he first gets done with the season, we're not ramping it up. We're not going crazy. We're just kind of getting his legs back, getting a lot of shots, do a lot of stationary ball handling. And then we'll do that. And then, you know, like, maybe in June, maybe July, we'll start really getting after it, like, going, like, super hard, like, using it to, like, develop his skills, our tightness skills, address whatever it is he wants to work at, but also get him back in basketball shape. And then in August, especially if you're working an NBA player, you want to, like, kind of start dialing down. So when they go into training camp, they're fresh and they have their legs. So just educate yourself on that process, I think, will go a long way.
So I hear you saying that the film piece of it is key. Do you mostly spend your time watching that player that you're going to be working out play Do you watch film of other guys, let's say at their position, who maybe they want to add something to their game? Like they come to you and they say, hey, I've been watching player X and I really want to add his curl off the screen, or I really want to add work on his, you know, step back, whatever. And then do you end up getting those kinds of requests, or do you end up watching film of other guys and then trying to incorporate that into the workout with the guy you're working with? Or do you mostly spend 99% of your time just focused on the player that you're working with and their film and what they do well?
I think it's both. So, again, you know, Jimmer is my most tenured, most decorated professional player, and we have the longest history, and it's always something every summer. And the thing you'll find out when you work out there, when you work out with pros, they have a high IQ. And so, like, it's a lot of, you know, conversing back and forth. It's not like I'm telling him, we're just talking. So, like, he'll tell me even during the year, here's what I'm working on, here's what I think I need to work on. So, like, I'm already starting to prepare for it there. So a few years ago, Allen Houston of the New York Knicks told him that he needs to get quicker off the, you know, he needs to be more deceptive and gets quicker into his pull-up jump shots. And so, like, I immediately went to Damian Lillard. I think that, like, his change of speed and his ability to accelerate under control into his pull-ups is second to none. And so, like, I just kind of just indulged in a lot of Damian Lillard clips and even, like, did some cut-ups and sent them to him so he could kind of, like, get an idea of, like, what we were doing before we got into it. And then, like, what I'd do is I would cross-reference that with watch clips of him so we could kind of see, you know, what he's lacking. And then, yeah, then obviously, like, you always want to, like, watch a lot of film of your client because, one, how is he playing? So, like, one, is he going back to the same team? If he's going back to the same team, I'm going to watch those. I'm going to watch a lot of those clips so we can get shots and all that stuff out of those actions. If he's going to a different team, then you got to watch film on the team that he's going to as well. And so, like, obviously we're watching, like, say, for example, going back to Jimmer, like, Jimmer's an amazing finisher. And so we're going to make sure that we always work on the finishing that he does well. And then maybe you pick up something where he can have a counter to one of the moves that he's comfortable with. So you definitely have to make sure, one, for maintenance purposes, that you understand what your client does good and what you can kind of add as counters to what they do well as well.
How much time are you putting in for a one-hour workout, kind of like the old homework to class ratio? For every hour you're in class, you're going to get 4 hours of homework. So for every hour of player development you do on the court with a guy like Jimmer Fredette, how much time are you putting in behind the scenes to prepare for that workout to make sure that you're providing maximum value to him?
Yeah. So I think that for me, like, player development, it's just like playing. Like, once I get into the rhythm, like, once we're into the summer, like, he can tell me 30 minutes before workout what he wants to work on, and I can just whip something up just because we have that flow.
Right.
You know, but, like, I think as we start and even before we start, that's when you go heavy, you know, on the film, or if it's something that he wants to work on, you know. So for, like, and that's another thing, like you said, an hour workout, that's another thing in terms of advice for working out professional players. Try to be as efficient as possible. Everything in there has to be purposeful. You know, that's $1 million investment, and they've got a lot. They've, to get to that point, they've put a lot of wear and tear on their body. So I see a lot of developers that lack that experience. They think it's some sort of accomplishment to make a player pass out or make them, like, get tired.
Right.
You know, and so they're just burning their legs. But, okay, you've got him doing all this running, but he's only gotten, like, 3 reps when we could minimize the running and, you know, cut that down and actually focus on what we need to focus on. But to answer your question, yeah, we're going to at the beginning, we're going to spend a lot of time. We're going to spend a lot of you know, I'm not going to sit and watch film for like 4 hours. I'd rather, like, you know, plan it out a week ahead and go watch a synergy, you know, where you can just get to it and watch for like 20 minutes, you know, sit down, maybe 30 minutes and just watch. I may watch all of Jimmer's misses, I may watch all of his left hand finishes and different things like that, where I can just get in the habit and just kind of take notes and then go from there and, you know, kind of do the workout. And so, like I said, once we get going, then we're just in such a flow that, you know, like I don't need as much prep time because we're kind of more entrenched. I would be more suited to like watch film of the workouts afterwards to be able to see. But that's what I was going to say is like our workouts are never longer than, I think we've never had a workout 90 minutes. Never. You know, like let's get as efficient as we can in 70 to 75 minutes, you know, because anything other than that, that's unnecessary wear and tear. Now, after that workout, like Jimmer, because he's, you know, committed to being the best shooter he can be, like he's always going to get his extra shots in at the end.
I'm guessing that the more you've worked with a player, so you've been with Jimmer, you said, for about 5 years, you have a much higher comfort level with him at this point where, as you said, if he calls you up and says, hey, I want to work out in 20 minutes, because you've worked with him so much and because you know the things that he does well and areas that he wants to continue to improve on, you could put something together. Whereas if you had a brand new client, somebody that you hadn't worked with before, and said, hey, you know, 3 days from now, I want to get a workout in with you. Now you're going to put in a lot more prep time because you don't know that guy, that player as well. So it's going to take more time to go back and be able to develop that. And I think that's just like, it's just like any other process, whether you're a coach of a team and you got to put together your practice plan, or whether you're a teacher and you have to put together a lesson plan. In order for things to go smoothly, there's a lot of planning that has to go on behind the scenes and a lot of prep work in order to make sure that you're maximizing, as you said, the efficiency of your workout or your lesson or your practice or however you want to look at that. I want to make sure, although the player development stuff is totally fascinating, we could probably talk for another couple hours about it, but I want to make sure we give you a chance to kind of get to where you are now and a couple of projects that you and I have talked about prior to jumping on the podcast, give you a chance to talk about those. So let's start with your book, and then we'll move on into what you have going with some of your online coaching that you're going to be offering. So let's start with the book, and then we'll move to the other piece of it after that.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, like I think that, like we talked about, like basketball is such a mental deal. I think, you know, everybody agrees that it's 80%, you know, mental, 20% physical. And if that's the case, we're failing our kids. Like we're failing athletes because we're so committed to the physical development. And I'm a man of faith, a coach of faith. And so the root of like my mental development, you know, whether it's direct or non-direct, is my faith. Obviously, like I respect that everybody has different things in terms of their faith and what they worship and what they don't worship. So I never push my beliefs on anybody, you know, but like it is reflected in that is what drives me to be good at my job. But I know there are a lot of people of faith that are like me, and the source of their mental strength and mental development is just that. And so it's crazy. I wrote this. I didn't even know I was writing a book. It was kind of when I was at Iowa State. You know, like I would work out. I spent obviously a great deal of time on the court with the players. But there were a handful of kids that I was able to develop that relationship with, like a guy like Lindell Wigginton and Taylen Horton Tucker, or Jacoby Long, who used to be at Iowa State. Spent a great deal of time, you know, helping them develop their character and mental development. And so as I was doing that, I knew that, man, the same things that these kids are going to hear, there's millions of kids all over the country and all over the world that are going through them. So like I would kind of like write, it motivated me to like write in my journal, like these basketball themed devotionals. And as I did my research, like I was looking for opportunities to help them. Like maybe you should read this book. I noticed that there's all kind of biblically based devotionals for every sector of life. You know, for women that are expecting, for somebody that's a widow that's grieving their loss, for everything. But there's not for basketball players. And, you know, as I was talking to my book company, Lucid Books, they made a good point. There's very few people that could really write something that could really speak to and connect to players, because you would have had to be entrenched in that while also being committed to your faith. And like, I wrote this book while I was in graduate school, and I was pretty much a full-time assistant coach at Iowa State. And so there's a lot of people maybe that were willing to do it, but I can attest that they didn't have the time, because I drove myself. I almost went crazy, you know, being able to balance all that. But I think that I needed to write it while I was entrenched in coaching and just living that lifestyle every day. So basically, the book is 51 basketball themed devotionals written for basketball players, to basketball players, in a way that they can digest and understand. And my goal is hopefully two things. One, it allows them, like I said, like when I was a basketball player, like when they do go through those dark times, something to lift them up. Or when they're successful, something to hold them accountable and not let success change them for the worse. And then also, if they are players of faith, they can kind of use basketball and the basketball analogies to maybe help them understand and deepen their faith. So I think that we're looking at publishing that early in 2020. But, you know, I'm really excited, because I really think that there's a need for it. And I think that it's going to really help a lot of basketball players as they navigate through their basketball careers.
Can you give us, I don't want you to give away the whole book, but can you give us maybe one snippet from the book, something that's in there that just kind of gives people an idea of what they're going to be looking for when the book comes out?
Yeah. Okay. So, and you know, like, along with my mentoring of the men's basketball players at Iowa State, I, you know, developed a big brother, little sister relationship with the girls team. We would train on the basketball court. And then I ended up, by the time I left, we were doing like these Bible studies that were kind of themed from the book. It would be eight or nine, you know, of the girls on the team. So it's really written to them. So like, I want to take things that they relate to. So like, there's one, I had a kid, and this is a true story. I had a kid that I mentored, and he was a D2 scholarship athlete, and he was on Snapchat, and his Snapchat was like boring and mundane. It was like, he woke up early in the morning, like 5-6 in the morning. He was reading. He has a special needs sister. He was helping her out. Then he would go to the gym. Then he would get a lift in. Then he would eat a healthy lunch. Then he'd take a nap. Then he would go back. Then he'd go play pickup. And then he'd be asleep by 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and repeat. As a result, you know, like, because that was his lifestyle, you know, he got the scholarship that he worked, that he really wanted to have. All right. So then I'm still following him on Snapchat. He gets to the school. I look at his Snapchat. It's a little different. You know, now, instead of getting up at 5 a.m, he's staying out till 3 a.m. You know, I go on a Snapchat on Monday. He was at Margarita Monday. Tuesday, Tuesday. You know, Thursday, he's at Thirsty.
Wait, did you pay LeBron? You just said Taco LeBron, Tuesday. You got to trademark that.
He didn't get it trademarked, so I'm good. But I know, about a few weeks after that, he calls me. Man, coach is tripping. I can't believe it. He's not playing me. He don't believe in me. And I listened to him rip his coach's thread. So I was like, oh, okay, so I got one question for you. It's like, man, I follow you on Snapchat, and your Snapchat looks a little more active. You know, look, as the kids say, it looks a little more lit. And I was like, are you the same kid this summer that on your Snapchat that was getting up at 5 a.m. and, you know, just reading and working out twice? And he kind of laughed, and he's like, no, I'm not. And then he kind of got his perspective back, and he got his starting spot back. And so just like telling stories like that. So the title of that one is Thirsty Thursday Can Wait. And I take, I take like scriptures from the Bible, you know, that kind of like pretty much talk about those principles. And that's kind of the feedback that I've gotten from that demographic, is like, oh, I can read this. I understand what this means. Oh, that makes sense. So, yeah, I'm excited, man.
Yeah, that's very cool. It's very cool that, one, you're taking personal stories that you've experienced and being able to share that with people. And then by being able to tie in the religious side of that, we know that there's a lot of people, especially kids in college, who are looking for that and need that. And so I think that by putting both of those two things together from your own personal experience, I think that's going to be tremendously valuable. So we'll put in the show notes, we'll put some information in there about the book so that people can know when it's coming out. And when it does come out, maybe we'll have to have you jump back on and share that a little bit once the book comes out and is ready to be able to be purchased. We'll help you to get some publicity for it. Last thing.
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
Last thing. Talk to us. Absolutely. Last thing. Talk to us about the other thing that you have going coming up, which is the online coaching. And talk to us a little bit about that, what that's going to look like. And then after you do that, we'll wrap up the episode as we're getting up close to an hour and a half. So go ahead and share what you're doing with the tech side of basketball.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm excited. I am a parent of a client that I have, and I got together and, you know, he's kind of like the brains. I'm just like the basketball guy that's, you know, making sure that it's practical or whatever. It's called Upsport. And so basically what Upsport is going to be is, and you know, if you, I'm sure you guys know, right? You've had parents, you know, reach out to you, you know, family, friends or whatever, and you can't help them because you haven't seen the game, you know, like they, so you can't tell them what the root of the problem is or why it is that their person, that their son or daughter is succeeding or why it's not. And as you know, nowadays, every parent, when I go to a gym or when I'm training, every parent is recording on that tablet or their smartphone. And I need to know, like, who, like, what kind of battery they have, because their battery life has to be crazy because they're recording everything. So since they're already recording it, we came up with Upsport, which is where you record your child. You take out all the dead time and then you go on Upsport and you upload that. And then you get to choose from a selected, carefully handcrafted, selected group of, you know, reputable coaches that are great, that can really articulate and teach the game. And it's that simple. That coach would then get an email. They'd open up their email, just get on their computer, and they're going to do a voiceover. So it's kind of like what I did at Iowa State or what we do. I don't think a lot of young players and young coaches understand how one prevalent film is, but you know how technologically advanced it is. When I was at Iowa State, you know, we would get we fly private. By the time we would go play at West Virginia, and by the time we got on the plane, the game was already on our computer, and we're watching it and different things like that. So the software that we developed is very similar to like what the high major colleges and NBA players work with. So that's the other thing too. We obviously want to encourage parents to go to upsport_io on Twitter or our website, upsport.io. We're looking to launch later this year. But also, if there are any, you know, respected basketball minds that, you know, have experience playing professionally, playing in college or coaching in college, you know, from that standpoint, what we're hoping is we're addressing a need for parents. Because our thing is we want to get them around reputable people that really understand the game. A lot of times you've got a dad that's coaching, and that's great. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. But they can tell you what your kid needs to do. With our basketball experience, we can tell you why he needs to do that or why he's not starting or what gives him the best chance. So that from that standpoint, but we want to develop a pool of quality coaches. So if you're a quality coach, please reach out to me. And, you know, this could be for what we're hoping is from the coaching standpoint is this could be like Uber drivers for basketball intellects. And what I mean by that is, you know, you get people and they've got their main job and they may just drive Uber on the side at their convenience. It's the same thing. You've got your main job, whether it's in basketball or it's not. And then, you know, you've got 2 to 3 hours of spare a week. And then you could, you know, help make a few bucks and help out a parent and help out a kid and help them, give them the best chance to be a good player through film and technology.
I think it's a great idea from both the player / parent perspective, but then also from the coach perspective, the opportunity to be able to, we talked about it all throughout the podcast tonight, of giving back and being able to have an impact. And if you can evaluate a kid and take a look at their film and give them honest feedback and help them improve and help them to understand exactly where they are, I think you guys are on the right track. I think it's a great idea. I loved it right from the moment you told me about it when we talked earlier today before we got on the podcast. I think it's a great idea. So I'll be looking forward to kind of watching your progress and see where you go with that. Give us your contact information, how people can follow you, find you, reach out to you. And then if you have anything else that we didn't touch on tonight before we get out of here, Nick, go ahead and share that. And then we'll come back and wrap up the episode.
Yeah. So like I'm active on social media. I've got so my social media is Culture, just the word Culture, Culture or Die, no underscores or anything like that. Culture or Die, D-I-E. That's Twitter and Instagram as well. My website is Nick Graham Player Development. On all three of those platforms, I try to put a lot of information to empower, encourage, athletes and parents and players, but just everybody. But I also try to put a lot of information, a lot of film breakdowns and stuff like that. Now that I've got the book, kind of completed, I'm going to get heavy on the film breakdowns of professional players and stuff like that. So if there's anything like that interests you, make sure you follow me. If there's anything else I can do to help you, just shoot me a message or a DM. You know, this is what I feel like my life's purpose is. As mentioned throughout the episode, I've been blessed to be around some of the game's best, not only just coaches and teachers, but best people. Eddie Sutton, Bill Self, Chauncey Billups, my dad, not only were they great people, great teachers, but they're great people. And I would feel like I wasn't living my life's purpose if I wasn't able to like regurgitate out to as many people as I can. So please reach out to me.
Nick, we can't thank you enough for spending an hour and a half with us tonight. It's been a pleasure getting a chance to talk through your story with you and just learn about all the great things that you've been able to do in the game, all the way from back when you were 4 years old, sitting at your dad's practices, to where you are now, and some of the things that you're trying to do to have an impact on kids, players, adults, in all different kinds of ways, whether it's through your player development directly on the court, whether it's through your book, whether it's through UpSport. I just think you have a lot of great things going that are going to make a difference in people's lives, and that's really what it's all about. So can't thank you enough. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.